dark clouds lift, revealing a full moon, which shines down on a grand country house. In the grounds, thieves break into a poultry house. A male employee from the house comes out with a shotgun and fires on the chicken thieves.
Brother, look, thieves!
In the house, a pretty young woman called Emma comes to her bedroom window. Liveried footmen help Emma's father, Mr. Woodhouse, into a fancy carriage where Emma and her tutor, Miss Taylor, are waiting. Mr. Woodhouse wears a wig, the women pretty bonnets.
It is still time to reconsider, my dear Miss Taylor. Come back home with us. James will not mind turning the carriage round, and nobody you know would take it amiss.
Papa, Mr. Weston would take it very much amiss.
Dear Mr. Woodhouse, you are very kind. I shall miss Hartfield. But I am very happy to become Mr. Weston's wife. Truly, I am.
But it's all very disturbing, Emma. Six good hens and now Miss Taylor. It's sad business. Good morning.
They pass run-down rural cottages. The church wedding is a simple affair.
Repeat after me. I, William Francis Weston.
I, William Francis Weston.
Take thee, Anna Taylor.
Take thee, Anna Taylor.
Guests watch the happy couple leave in their open carriage. Kate Beckinsale, Mark Strong, Prunella Scales, Bernard Hepton, Raymond Coulthard and Samantha Morton in Jane Austen's Emma. Screenplay by Andrew Davies. Mr. Woodhouse mops his eyes.
Poor Miss Taylor.
Oh, Father.
Dinner at home.
What a pity it is that Mr. Weston never thought of her.
But, Father, you wouldn't have Miss Taylor live with us forever when she could have a house of her own. It's been a long time since I needed a governess.
She will never see us now. Randall's is such a distance.
It's barely half a mile, Father.
Depend upon it, we shall see Mrs. Weston nearly every day.
Well, I take it very ill when people get married and go away. I think they should not do it.
Will you play it backgammon, Father?
Oh, why will people call at such a late
hour? A coat is taken.
There you are. How are you, Thomas, and your family?
Very well, Mr. Knightley. Thank you, sir.
Well, how did it go? I'm sorry to have missed it. How did you all behave, Who cried most?
Ah, poor Miss Taylor.
Poor Mr. Woodhouse? Poor Miss Woodhouse, if you like, but I can't say poor Miss Taylor. At the very least, she has only one to please now, not two.
Especially when one of those two is such a fanciful, troublesome creature. Is that what you were thinking?
Perhaps.
I'm afraid that's very true. I believe I am sometimes very fanciful and troublesome.
Oh, dearest Papa, I didn't mean you. Mr. Knightley didn't mean you. I meant only myself. Mr. Knightley loves to find fault with me.
Oh, dear.
In a joke. It is all a joke.
Ah, yes, of course.
We always say what we like to one another. Well, you want to hear about the wedding? We all behave charmingly. Everybody punctual, everybody in their best looks, not a tear and hardly a long face to be seen.
Dear Emma bears everything so well.
But every friend of Miss Taylor's must be glad to see her married.
And you've forgotten one matter of joy to me, that I made the match myself.
You made a lucky guess, Emma. That's all that can be said for you.
I wish you would not make matches, my dear. For whatever you say always comes to pass. Pray, do not make any more of them, Emma.
Oh, I promise to make none for myself, Papa, but I must indeed for other people. Poor Mr. Elton now. I must look about for a wife for him.
You'd do better to leave the poor man alone, Emma.
But he has been here a whole year, and he has fitted out the vicarage so comfortably, it'd be a shame to have him single any longer.
A lady shushes four little girls, giggling behind the back pews. Young Mr. Elton sings out from the pulpit as he surveys his church pews full of parishioners. Pretty dark-haired Emma and her father are sitting alone in a slightly grander side pew up front. Emma surveys the rest of Mr. Elton's flock, and the light shining through one of the windows seems to intensify. To Emma, the shaft of sunlight seems to highlight a pretty girl with long blonde curls who shoots Emma a friendly smile. After church, Emma questions an older lady about the girl.
Harriet Smith. She's somebody's natural daughter, you know.
She seems a very sweet, genteel girl.
Indeed she is. She has just now returned to the school as parlour boarder. She spent the summer at her friend's house in the country.
They watch Harriet and friends chatting to a young sandy-haired farmer.
It would be good for her to have the benefit of more varied society.
Would you like to send her on Tuesday to my father's whist party?
Oh, Miss Woodhouse, that is very kind.
I should be glad to know her better.
At the whist party...
Mrs. Bates, let me propose you venturing on one of these eggs. An egg boiled very soft, you know, is not unwholesome.
Yes.
Mr. Perry is not altogether against eggs, are you, Mr. Perry?
Against eggs? No, indeed. A soft-boiled egg will do you no harm.
There you are, Mrs. Bates. Mr. Perry says it is all right.
Indeed, she dearly loves a fresh egg softly boiled.
I think she does not hear, Miss Bates.
Mr. Knightley was so good as to let us have 3 dozen of his very best fresh laid eggs.
Searle understands boiling an egg better than anybody.
And when his man, William Larkins, brought them around, he said that Mr. Knightley is left without an egg.
I would not recommend an egg boiled by anybody else.
Imagine, no eggs at Donwell Abbey, but then he is so very generous.
You need not be afraid. These are very small, you see. One of our small eggs will not hurt you. I think she does not hear, Miss Bates.
Allow me to help you, Mrs. Bates.
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Elton. You are very, very kind within everyone.
And they have 8 cows, 2 of them Aldenies, and 1 a little Welsh cow. A very pretty little Welsh cow. And Mrs. Martin said, as I was so fond of it, it should be called my cow. Do you know the Martins, Miss Woodhouse? Mr. Martin knows you by sight very well. His farm is very near to Donwell.
Then they must be Mr. Knightley's tenants. I may have seen Mr. Martin 50 times without having any idea of his name. A young farmer's not at all the sort of person to raise my curiosity.
No, no, I suppose not. But they have 2 parlours, 2 very good parlours.
Indeed. Well, Harriet, I'm sure these Martins must feel very proud to entertain a gentleman's daughter.
I do not know that my father is a gentleman, Miss Woodhouse.
Oh, I'm quite sure he is. But even so, and particularly bearing in mind the misfortune of your birth, you should be very careful whom you choose as your friends.
Oh, do you think so?
I'm quite sure of it.
Miss Smith, what do you say to a little bit of apple tart? A very little bit? Let Emma help you to a very little bit of apple tart.
No, no, no. Allow me.
The young vicar takes the plate from a manservant and hands it to Harriet, who's sitting with Emma. Emma gives him a smile. Later, dressed in a white nightgown and sitting at her bedroom window, Emma imagines a fairy tale ending to her match. In her sunlit fantasy, Harriet and Mr. Elton are showered with rose petals as they make their way to their wedding carriage.
How can I ever thank you enough, Miss Woodhouse, for showing me where true joy was to be found? Mrs. Elton and I are eternally indebted to you.
And to think that I should turn out to be the daughter of a baronet.
Why not? Stranger things have happened.
Harriet and Emma.
I do so wonder that you should not be married. So charming as you are.
I must find other people charming. One person at least. I have very little intention of ever marrying at all.
Dear me!
Why should I? I lack neither fortune nor consequence. If I were to fall in love, that would be different. But then I have never been in love. It is not my way or my nature.
But then to be an old maid at last, like Miss Bates.
If I thought I should ever be like Miss Bates, I would marry tomorrow.
The sandy-haired farmer.
Oh, Miss Woodhouse, there is Mr. Martin.
Oh, really?
He bows.
I never thought to meet you walking here, Miss Smith.
Oh, dear. Perhaps I should... Excuse me.
No, no, please. I shall wait for you, Harriet.
Mr. Martin bows again as Emma walks away, then approaches Harriet with a broad smile and talks to her of a book and some papers he's carrying. Emma watches disapprovingly from a distance as the couple interact. Emma looks away impatiently. Harriet glances over at Emma and quickly brings her conversation to a close. She and Mr. Martin bow and he watches her walk away before striding off through the woods. Harriet rejoins Emma, her eyes sparkling.
Only think about happening to meet him. Oh, Miss Woodhouse, please say what you think of him. Do you think him so very plain?
He is very plain, undoubtedly. But that is nothing compared with his entire lack of gentility.
I did not expect much, but I had no idea he could be so very clownish, so totally without air.
To be sure. He is not so genteel as real gentlemen.
Indeed, no. Consider Mr. Knightley. Consider Mr. Elton.
Certainly he is not like Mr. Knightley. But Mr. Knightley is so very fine a man.
And Mr. Elton, who has paid you such particular attentions. You must see the difference.
Yes. I suppose there is a great difference.
And I think Mr. Elton is becoming very fond of you. Harriet, have you ever had your likeness taken?
They're with Mr. Elton.
Don't you think she makes a charming picture?
Oh, yes, indeed. You have given Miss Smith all that she required. She was a beautiful creature when she came to you, but you have made her graceful and easy.
Oh, no, no, she only wanted drawing out.
Oh, I shall never do justice to her. Do you see, Mr. Elton? Her features are so delicate, and yet there's a peculiarity in the shape of the eyes and the line about the mouth.
Exactly. And that's just what you caught. There she is, to the very life.
Mr. Elton, I've scarcely begun.
Oh, but these are excellent.
No, no, nothing like. You will see when they come. My sister Isabella and her children, they would never keep still. Her husband, Mr. John Knightley, he is not so bad, but Isabella said it didn't do him justice. So I resolved to give up portraits forever, at least where there are husbands and wives in the case.
Ah, yes, but there are no husbands and wives in this case. Or should I say, not at present.
Emma shows Harriet's portrait to family and friends.
Perfection. Absolute perfection.
Miss Smith has not those eyebrows, I think.
Oh, no. I cannot agree with you.
You've made her too tall, Emma.
Oh, no. Certainly not too tall. Well, consider, she's sitting down. And the proportions, you know, must be preserved.
It's very pretty. But, my dear, she seems to be sitting out of doors with only a little shawl over her shoulders. It makes one think she must catch cold.
But, Papa, it's supposed to be summer. A warm day in summer. Look at the tree.
I regard it as a most happy thought, the placing of Miss Smith out of doors. And the tree is touched with such inimitable spirit. Miss Woodhouse, might I appeal for the commission of getting the picture framed? If you would trust me with it, I could ride to London at any time. No. No, I will be bold and insist that you entrust it to no one but me.
She beams at Elton. Emma watches Mr. Elton ride away from Hartfield with a smug smile. Harriet catches up with her in the garden.
Oh, Miss Woodhouse, you will never guess. He has proposed.
Already? But are you quite sure?
Yes. He says so quite clearly in this letter. Oh, Miss Woodhouse, what am I to do?
But this letter is from Mr. Robert Martin.
Yes. Didn't I say that? Do you think it is a good letter? Is it too short?
No, it is a good letter. A very good letter. Much better than I should have expected.
So, how should I reply? Oh, Miss Woodhouse, please advise me.
Oh, no, the letter had much better be all your own. But your meaning must be quite clear. No doubts or demurs. You need not elaborate on your sorrow at his disappointment.
You think I ought to refuse him, then?
Harriet, are you in any doubt?
I had no notion he liked me so very much.
I lay it down as a general rule, Harriet, that if a woman doubts, she certainly ought to refuse him. But do not imagine I want to influence you.
Oh, no, I'm sure. But if you would just advise me what I had best... I don't mean that. As you say, one's mind ought to be quite made up. Do you think I'd better say no?
Harriet, you must be the best judge of your own happiness. Do you truly prefer Mr. Martin to every other man you've ever met? Harriet... Harriet, do not deceive yourself. Do not be run away with by gratitude and compassion.
Miss Woodhouse, as you won't give me your opinion, I think, yes, I have now quite determined and have almost made up my mind to refuse Mr. Martin. Do you think I am right?
Perfectly, perfectly right. Dearest Harriet,
And now I can tell you what I could not tell you before, because I would not influence you. Had you accepted him, I would have lost my friend. I could not have visited Mrs. Robert Martin of Abbey Mill Farm. Now I'm secure of you forever.
Harriet smiles thinly as Emma takes her arm. Emma's in the drawing room with Mr. Knightley, who has longish brown hair and an intense gaze.
She refused him?
Yes.
Harriet Smith refused Robert Martin?
Yes.
Then she's a greater simpleton than I thought. What is the foolish girl about?
Oh, to be sure. A man always imagines a woman to be ready for anyone who asks her.
Nonsense. A man does not imagine any such thing. I hope you're mistaken.
I saw her answer. Nothing could be clearer.
You saw her answer? You wrote her answer? Emma, this is your doing. You persuaded her to refuse him.
And if I did, I should not feel that I'd done wrong. Mr. Martin is a very respectable young man, I am sure, but he is not Harriet's equal.
No, he's not. He's her superior in both sense and situation. Harriet Smith is the natural daughter of nobody knows whom. A girl with no connections, a parlour boarder at a common school. She's been taught nothing that is useful. She's pretty, she is good-tempered, and that is all. My only scruple in recommending the match to Robert...
You recommended it?
Yes, I did. My only scruple was on his account. I felt he could do much better, both as to fortune and as to securing a useful helpmate, but I could not reason so to a man so much in love. And depend upon it, he had encouragement from her.
She may have been inclined towards him at one time, but the case is altered now. She knows now what a gentleman is, and no one but a gentleman has any chance with Harriet.
Oh, that is nonsense! That is arrant nonsense! You're not thinking of Elton, are you? If you are, depend upon it, Elton won't do. He may talk sentimentally, but he will act rationally. He knows the value of a good income. Harriet Smith has no chance
there. I have no intention of marrying Harriet to anybody.
You have done your friend no favours, Emma. You have spoilt her best chance of happiness. It was badly done, and I am sorry for it.
Emma's eyes glisten as he stalks angrily to the door.
Good day to you.
You are wrong, Mr. Knightley, and you will see you are wrong, and then you will be sorry.
Mr. Knightley's brother John and Emma's sister Isabella have arrived with their brood. John plays with the children. Emma holds her baby niece.
Now, run for your uncle as fast as you can.
Mr. Knightley lifts his niece.
Oh, Papa is distressed.
Well, well, that'll do. No more. Take him away, Betty. Off with him, Jane. No, 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 no more. Say goodnight to your grandpapa, sir.
My little Emma shall stay a while.
Ah, she makes no noise. You look well thus, Emma.
Holding the baby, she smiles.
Good night.
Now then, sir, shall we take you, your little horse? Yes, we will, sir.
Mr. Knightley comes over to Emma and takes baby Emma from her, holding the baby close. John hands his son to a nanny.
Night, night, sir.
Mr. Knightley looks from little Emma to big Emma.
I remember holding you thus once upon a time.
You and I must not be enemies.
No. You may do wrong, and I may be angry with you, but you and I shall never be enemies.
You forget that I have not been proved wrong. But I do hope that Mr. Martin is not very disappointed.
A man could not be more so.
Then indeed, I am very sorry.
No, Isabella, there is no avoiding it. Mr. and Mrs. Weston have invited me, and we must go. Christmas Eve or not, whatever the weather. She is a bride, and the visit must be paid, I do believe, whatever the consequences.
It's snowing as the party get into carriages. A servant holds a brolly for John and Emma.
Aye, Mr. Weston must have a very good opinion of himself. Asking people to leave their own fireside in the depths of winter just for the sake of coming to see him. He must think himself a most agreeable fellow.
Mr. Woodhouse and Isabella, in a second carriage, are shaken about as they go over a pothole.
Go slowly, James. Go carefully.
Oh,
And here we are, setting forward to spend 5 dull hours in another man's house, going in dismal weather to return probably in worse, actually snowing at this moment and more to come. 4 horses and 4 servants taken out for nothing but to convey 4 idle, shivering creatures into colder rooms and worse company than they might have had at home.
But you must know we are sure of excellent fires and everything in the greatest comfort.
Here's the parson. He looks keen enough.
John glances at Emma as Mr. Elton steps up to their carriage.
My dear sir, words cannot express my gratitude. On such a night as this, a Christmas party, nothing could be pleasanter. Miss Woodhouse, this is an honour. Nay, a delight.
Well, get yourself in, man, and get the door shut, and the less said, the better.
Mr. Elton clambers in with a smile for Emma. They draw up at Randall's, the Weston's comfortable ivy-covered house. Later, they're gathered around the dining table as a flaming dessert's brought in.
A very happy gathering indeed. We want only 2 more to be just the right number. Your pretty little friend, Miss Smith. Bad sore throat.
Oh, dear. Has Perry been called?
Yes, and recommends she stay in bed.
Yes, what a shame for her, and a sad loss for us.
Indeed.
And my son, Frank. I had thought that Frank would be here for Christmas, but it was not to be. So, to absent friends.
The men rise, the women remain seated.
Absent friends.
I'm beginning to fear I shall never meet the famous Mr. Frank Churchill.
No, you're wrong, for he has promised to be with us in 2 weeks' time. Frank is the son of my first marriage, Mr. Elton. His poor mother died when he was but 2 years old, and her family undertook his care and education, and in gratitude he took their name.
A good deal of money in it, I dare say.
What age is the young man now?
He is 23, and though I say it myself, as fine a young man as anyone could wish to see. My only complaint is that Mrs. Churchill likes to keep him at her beck and call in Yorkshire, so that he's not able to be here as often as he would wish.
Indeed, for I have never yet set eyes on him.
He should have come before this. Speak bluntly, ma'am, it is his plain duty to his father and to you.
Well, I forgive him. It is a delicate business. Mrs. Churchill rules at Enscombe, and she's a very odd-tempered woman. And his coming now depends on her being willing to spare him.
That is the young man in question. Frank to the very life.
Then he is very handsome. Is he not, Mr. Elton?
I hardly know. Appearances may often deceive.
Mr. Elton moves away from Frank's portrait.
As is well known, I intend never to marry. But I confess, if I were to change my mind, I have always thought Mr. Frank Churchill might be the man. For by all accounts, he seems to be the very epitome of manly excellence.
Apart from his disinclination to exert himself and do what he knows to be right.
Mr. Knightley, isn't it very unfair to judge a person's conduct when we do not know his situation? He may be unable to do what he truly wishes.
There is one thing a man can always do if he chooses, and that is his duty. If he truly willed it, he could be here tomorrow.
You seem determined to think ill of him.
I? Not at all. He's a person I never think of from 1 month's end to another.
Mr. Knightley leaves Emma enjoying Frank's portrait and Mr. Elton takes his place. Comely Mrs. Weston, formerly Miss Taylor, corners Knightley.
How well she looks tonight.
As to her beauty, she always looks well, but as to her character...
Come, Mr. Knightley. With all her faults, you know she is an excellent creature.
Perhaps she is. But you think she has nothing to learn? I should have been in love and in some doubt of a return.
Would you? Really?
Do her good.
John comes in.
Well, the snow is lying 3 inches deep, still coming down hard. A spirited beginning for your winter engagements, Mr. Woodhouse.
Oh, Isabella. Papa. Emma. Emma? What can we do?
I'm sure it's not so very bad, Papa.
I admired your determination in setting out, sir, and I dare say we shall get home alive. We are 2 carriages. If one is blown over, there will be the other at hand.
The Woodhouses' carriages pull up outside in the snow. Mr. Woodhouse is helped out into the cold by Isabella and Mr. Knightley, followed by John. A maid hands Elton his coat.
Mrs. Weston. How can I thank you for such a splendid evening?
Emma has wandered back into the drawing room with her cloak on and is drawn back to Frank's portrait. She imagines him coming to life in all his blonde handsomeness and nodding to her.
Miss Woodhouse, we meet at last.
He gallantly kisses her gloved hand. The portrait is just a portrait again. Emma turns and walks across to the doorway, pausing for one last peep at Frank's portrait before stepping into the hall where she's surprised and dismayed to see just Mr. Elton and the Westons.
Mr. John Knightley went in the first carriage with Mrs. Knightley and your father. I am to have the pleasure of escorting you.
Oh, thank you.
In the carriage on the way home, Mr. Elton focuses intently on Emma, who glances away. He suddenly lunges forwards and grabs her hands, then tries to kiss her. She jumps away.
It seems a pity that our party had to... Mr. Elton!
Forgive me. I must avail myself of this God-given opportunity to tell you what I'm sure you must already know. That I adore you, worship you, passionately.
Mr. Elton, please!
Forgive me. I can't help myself. Dearest Miss Woodhouse, Emma, release me from torment. Tell me you return my love. Tell me you will be my wife and make me the happiest man on earth. Oh, Emma, I read my answer in your eyes.
Mr. Elton, I am astonished.
No, I'm sure you cannot be. Lovely, lovely as you are.
Mr. Elton, I think you must have drunk too much of Mr. Weston's good wine. You have forgot yourself. I am not Miss Smith, but I shall be happy to take any message to her.
Miss Smith? What should I have to do with Miss Smith? What do I care about her? Who can think of Miss Smith when Miss Woodhouse is near? No, you are all loveliness and modesty, but I'm sure you could not have mistaken my intentions. No, indeed you could not. Charming Miss Woodhouse, allow me to interpret this interesting silence. It confesses that you have long understood me. Does it not? Lovely. Lovely, Miss Woodhouse.
No, sir, it confesses no such thing. I have seen you only as the admirer of my friend. In no other light could you have been more to me than a common acquaintance. After all your attentions to Miss Smith, do you ask me to believe you have never thought seriously of
Miss
her?
Miss Smith? I think seriously of Miss Smith. No doubt there are men who might not object. Everyone has their level. But I am not, I think, quite so much at a loss. No, madam. My visits have been for yourself only. After all the encouragement I received.
Encouragement? Sir, you've been entirely mistaken in supposing it. I'm exceedingly sorry, but it's as well the mistake ends where it does. I trust your disappointment will not be lasting. I have no thoughts of matrimony at present.
The couple glare off angrily in different directions. Snow is falling heavily on the trees around the vicarage. A manservant opens the carriage door and Mr. Elton steps out. Hey! Remembering himself, he steps back to the carriage and bows.
Good night.
He goes. Emma's face crumples in distress.
Oh, Harriet. Harriet.
Mr. Elton's outside the Bell Tavern, waiting with other passengers for luggage to be unloaded from the public stagecoach and the horses to be changed. Emma walks by and spots him.
Step up now, gentlemen.
Mr. Elton and the other male passengers clamber onto the coach. Emma, who's wearing a smart coat and puffy velvet beret, hurries past quickly as Mr. Elton sits on a seat up front and covers his knees with a blanket. She calls on a distressed red-eyed Harriet, who's alone in the schoolhouse.
Hi there.
Hey. It's all my fault. Oh, Harry, can you ever forgive me?
There is nothing to forgive. Dear Miss Woodhouse. I have nothing to complain of. I could never have deserved such a man as Mr. Elton.
No, indeed, for now I believe he does not deserve you. I'm heartily ashamed of myself and I'm determined to mend my ways.
Oh, Miss Woodhouse, I am sure none would ever blame you.
Well, if you forgive me, then I'm not entirely cast down. I was on my way to Ford's. Would you like to walk there with me?
Yes.
Miss Woodhouse!
Oh, Lord, Miss Bates.
Forgive me, I could not help but see you. Jane is here. Yes, she arrived this morning. Mother and I would take it so kindly if you would step up, Miss Woodhouse. Miss Smith, too, if you would, Miss Smith.
Well, that is very kind, but...
Thank you, Miss Bates, but we cannot stay long.
Jane will be beside herself with joy.
I doubt it.
They enter the Bates house.
Mrs. Goddard told me that Miss Fairfax is to stay in Highbury with her aunt all summer. What is she like, Miss Woodhouse?
Jane Fairfax is a penniless orphan who has been brought up in some style by Colonel Campbell as a companion to his daughter. But now the daughter's married, and so Jane must find employment. Everyone speaks highly of her. I wish her well, but I'm sick of the very name of her.
Oh, Miss Woodhouse. Yes, it was such a surprise because we thought Colonel Campbell would need the carriage himself. And, you know, he would never send dear Jane post. But as it turned out, they all went off to Ireland 2 days early.
Indeed. Are the whole family gone, Miss Fairfax?
Yes, they are in...
Ballycraig, you know, a very beautiful place, I fancy. Miss Campbell is married to Mr. Dixon now, and so, of course, I should call her Mrs. Dixon, but I always forget. We should call Miss Campbell Mrs. Dixon now, Mother, should we not? She's only a very little deaf, you know. She always hears what Jane says, but then Jane always speaks so distinct. Yes, Mr. Dixon always thought so very highly of Jane, but in the end, you know, I believe they are very happy and both very fond of Jane. We thought you would accompany them to Ireland. Jane has heard so much about the beauty of the place from Mr. Dixon, I mean, and because Jane used very often to be walking out with them, he is a most amiable, charming young man, I believe. Jane was quite longing to go to Ireland from his account of things.
But you did not go with them after all?
I thought it better I should not. I shall have to earn my bread sooner or later, and so resolved that the sooner I made up my mind, the less pain I should inflict or endure.
Mr. and Mrs. Dixon must have been very disappointed.
Jane smiles and looks down.
Indeed, I think they must have been. Nothing could have been more kind and pressing. Mr. Dixon does not seem backward in any attention. He is a most charming young man, ever since the service he rendered Jane at Weymouth.
Please, Aunt.
No, you will not mind my telling it to Miss Woodhouse and Miss Smith. Poor Jane nearly met with a terrible calamity. They were out on the water in a boating party. Jane, you know, and Mr. Dixon and Miss Campbell. Well, that she was then. And I think they had gone out rather far, for a squall blew up, and poor Jane, from the sudden whirling around to something or other among the sails, would have been dashed into the sea at once. Oh.
Emma imagines a dramatic version of the rescue where Jane ends up in Mr. Dixon's arms.
And ever since we had the history of that day, I have been so fond of Mr. Dixon.
Oh, what a shocking tale. But one with a happy ending.
Jane's entertaining a small gathering at Hartfield House. She sits at the piano in a low-cut dress. Various bewigged footmen stand to attention in the grand candlelit drawing room. Elderly Miss Bates and her ancient mother are sitting either side of Mr. Woodhouse. The Westons are sitting on a smart sofa with Harriet, and Emma's sitting next to Mr. Knightley. She notices him watching Jane with interest.
That even his fiancée was Jane's equal.
She does play and sing infuriatingly well.
I've rarely heard anything to equal her.
Certainly not from me.
As you say. But you will not take the pains to aspire to true excellence. She would make a good companion for you.
I'm sure you're right, but I cannot warm to her. I don't know why. I wish I could, but I can't.
Aunt, I'll be very proud of you. Perhaps because you see in her the truly accomplished young lady you would like to be thought yourself?
Thank you. I'm quite ashamed of myself.
Emma joins Jane.
Did you enjoy the music, Mrs. Bates?
She's only a very little deaf, you know. Beautiful play. Did not you think so, Miss Woodhouse?
Oh, yes.
Emma takes Jane's arm and they sit down together.
Mrs. Weston tells me Mr. Frank Churchill was in Weymouth. Would he have been there at the same time as you?
Yes, I think he was for some of the time.
And were you acquainted with him? Did you have any conversation?
We were a little acquainted, yes.
I have to tell you, he is a young gentleman in whom I have the keenest interest. You know, he is Mr. Weston's son, and we expect a visit from him very soon. We've never seen him in Highbury. Tell me, what is he really like? Is he handsome?
I believe he's reckoned to be a very fine young man.
And is he agreeable?
He has generally thought so.
What did you think of him?
When one's in company all the time at such a place as Weymouth, it is difficult to form a just impression. I think everybody found his manners pleasing.
I see I shall have to be content with that.
Harriet and Emma in an open-topped carriage on a hill overlooking a castle-like dwelling.
And all this is Mr. Knightley's.
Of course. There is Donwell Abbey, and all these farms belong to the Donwell estate, and everyone who lives here is a tenant of Mr. Knightley's, or his servant.
I should never have thought that one man could own so much. The sparrows and the skylarks don't belong to Mr. Knightley, do they?
Perhaps not, but the woodcock and the pheasants certainly do. Drive on.
They stop in front of a pleasant-looking, good-sized, honey-coloured stone farmhouse with a picket fence.
Don't you think it is pretty and well-kept, Miss Woodhouse?
Very well-kept.
Oh, dear. Now the time has come, I feel so very strange. Not quite easy about seeing the Martins after. But I must be sensible.
Yes, you must, Harriet. Tell your friends you are only able to stay 15 minutes. There will be no danger in that.
Yes. Yes.
Harriet, in cloak and straw bonnet, clambers out of the carriage.
Drive on, James, to the end of the lane and turn the carriage.
Harriet pauses at the gate to the Martins' farm and looks back at Emma's carriage before approaching the tidy porch. Emma's driven down the lane past thatched farm buildings. Young Mr. Martin is standing by some stables. He turns and sees Emma in her rich velvet hat and coat, sitting in her fine carriage, and gives her a curt, unsmiling bow before picking up his jacket and walking off. Emma's driver takes the carriage back to the cottage, and they wait for Harriet, who emerges with three female members of the Martin family, who see her to the gate. They rattle off on their way.
It was not quite comfortable at first, but then Mrs. Martin said she thought I'd grown since the summer, and we went to see the marks on the wainscot where Mr. Martin had measured us all, and they measured me again, and Mrs. Martin said she thought I'd grown a good half inch. And we were all beginning to be like ourselves again. And just at the end, what do you think? Mr. Martin himself came in.
And what then?
Oh, nothing. He excused himself for being dirty and went away to wash himself. And then it was time for me to come away.
A maid is waiting to take Emma's gloves when she gets back to the house. A manservant opens the drawing room door for her. The Westons are there with Frank. The two men rise.
Ah, Miss Woodhouse. Emma, allow me to present to you my son, Mr. Frank Churchill.
Miss Woodhouse.
Blonde, curly-haired Frank bows. Emma curtsies.
We meet at last.
And how do you like my son, Mr.
I was extremely happy to meet Mrs. Weston. I was sure I would like her from her letters, but I didn't expect to see such beauty. I had imagined, well, a tolerably well-looking woman of a certain age. I didn't expect to see a pretty young woman.
No, I don't. Mr. Churchill, you couldn't praise her too highly for me, but you mustn't let Mrs. Weston hear you speaking of her as a pretty young woman.
Oh, I hope I should know better. I know whom I might praise without being thought extravagant in my terms.
I must be going. I have business at the Crown. But I needn't hurry anybody else.
No, if you have business, sir. Perhaps I should pay a visit, which must be paid at some time. A neighbour of yours, the name is Fairfax? But I believe the family are called Barnes or Bates?
Of course we know Mrs. Bates. We passed by the house. Miss Bates was at the window. Miss Fairfax, of course, you met at Weymouth. A fine girl. Call upon her, by all means.
Oh, it is of little matter. Another day would do as well. There was that degree of acquaintance at Weymouth.
Go today, go today. What's right to be done cannot be done too soon. If you don't call early, it will be a slight.
Nothing for it, then. I hope that you will have time to introduce me to Highbury, Miss Woodhouse, and show me all the points of interest.
Mr. and Mrs. Weston share a knowing look as the youngsters exchange smiles. Frank and Emma stroll along a dirt road through the village.
This is the Crown Inn.
That looks a fine room on the first floor. One could hold a very good there, I should say.
I believe it was a ballroom many years ago.
Then we must revive it. Restore its former glory. Are you fond of dancing?
Oh, very fond indeed. But there are too few young people in the village now to hold a dance.
Surely not. I'm sure we shall find enough, even if we have to send out as far as Leatherhead. No, a ball there shall be, and you and I shall dance at it.
And there's the Bates house. You see, I'm getting to be quite at home in Highbury already.
Did you pay your visit yesterday?
Yes. Oh, yes, I was just going to mention it. I thought it would never end. 10 minutes would have sufficed, but there was no getting away. The talking aunt, you know. I was there 3/4 of an hour.
And how did you think Miss Fairfax looked?
Oh, very ill. If ladies can be allowed to look ill, a most deplorable want of complexion.
No, I won't allow that. Miss Fairfax has her own style of beauty. Perhaps it's not to your taste.
Yes, perhaps that's it. Yes. I believe you're
right. She smirks.
Did you see her often at Weymouth? Were you often in the same society?
Ah, this must be Ford's, that everybody attends every day of their lives. Let's go in. Then I can prove myself a true citizen of Highbury. Well, I must buy something at Ford's. I dare say they sell gloves.
Oh, yes. Lay out half a guinea in Ford's and you'll be adored by all Highbury.
They head into the shop, later strolling through woodland.
And what more delights does Highbury have in store for me?
Oh, I fear we are coming to the end of them. This is Mr. Elton's house.
Ah. It's rather small, of course, but quite suitable for him.
Mr. Elton is the vicar and considered by some to be a very fine young man.
Oh, I know a good deal of Mr. Elton, though I've never met him.
Really?
I know he is at present in Bath, just recently engaged and shortly to be married to a Miss Augusta Hawkins of Bristol with a fortune of £10,000.
Then you know more than I do.
Oh, I had it from Miss Bates. Everybody's full of it. Agog to see Mr. Elton's bride. So, this is where they will live. I think they'll be very snug and happy. It's a perfectly good house to share with the woman you truly love. A man would be a blockhead who wanted more.
You can say this, you who have been used to Enscombe with every degree of luxury.
Well, I care nothing for Enscombe. What is the good of wealth and luxury where there is no true happiness?
Wearing a tailcoat and top hat, he gives her a charming smile.
If you make the full circle to Randall's, you see, I have got my bearings.
A maid brings a tea tray to Mr. and Mrs. Weston. Frank and Emma are by a piano in the drawing room.
Thank you, Jane.
This is a handsome instrument. Do you play, Miss Woodhouse?
Of course, but not very well. Not nearly as well as Jane Fairfax. Have you heard her play?
Yes, once or twice at Weymouth. She appeared to me to play well, but I know nothing of the matter myself. Though one of the party always preferred Miss Fairfax's playing to that of his fiancée.
So, Mr. Dixon is musical, is he?
Yes. Mr. and Mrs. Dixon were the persons. I thought it a very strong proof of Miss Fairfax's excellence.
Proof indeed. But wasn't Miss Fairfax embarrassed at this preference of Mr. Dixon's? And did he perhaps prefer her in other ways, too?
I really cannot say.
No. Who can tell what Jane Fairfax is feeling? She is so very reserved. I could never attach myself to anyone so completely reserved.
No. There is safety in reserve, but no attraction. One cannot love a reserved person.
Emma smiles at him.
Father, I believe I must go to London tomorrow.
To London? Whatever for?
To get his hair cut?
I fear he has, Mr. Knightley. 16 miles there and 16 miles back. I told him he was a coxcomb, but he would not be dissuaded.
Foreign nonsense.
All young people will have their little whims, Mr. Knightley.
Yes, I see. Just the sort of trifling silly fellow I took him for.
I hope he will not get it cut too short. I'm very much afraid he will catch cold from it.
You will excuse me now, Mr. Woodhouse. I have some business to attend to, which I postponed to be here. Doubtless I shall meet this young man at your party for him, Mrs. Weston. I bid you all good day.
Mr. Knightley stalks out of the assembled company. Emma stifles giggles and the Westons share a smile. Some villagers have gathered in front of the Bates house to watch workmen hoisting a piano past the first floor window with a rope and pulley. Miss Bates is inside with her mother.
It is a pianoforte, mother!
Mr. Knightley is descending from his carriage outside Randall's when Emma arrives in her fine black carriage, which has a front cover with a burgundy fringe. a footman gets down from the back and opens the door, and Mr. Knightley helps her out.
This is coming as you should do. Using your carriage for once, like a gentleman, instead of walking everywhere.
Lucky we should arrive at the same moment, then. Or you wouldn't have noticed that I'm more of a gentleman than usual this evening.
Yes, I should. I'm sure I should.
Sensical girl.
Greatest surprise, and really quite the finest you could wish for. Not a grand, but a large-sized square one. A very elegant-looking instrument. And it arrived just yesterday without any direction. Jane herself was quite at a loss who it could be from.
What a mystery.
Ah, but now we conclude it could only be from one quarter, do we not, Jane? For who else could it be from but Colonel Campbell? I declare, I don't know when I heard...
What are they talking about?
More satisfaction.
It seems that some mysterious person has made Miss Fairfax the present of a piano forte.
Now she has the...
Why do you smile?
Nay, why do you? I smile because you smile. Why, do you suspect something? Colonel Campbell is not the giver who can be.
What do you say to Mr. Dixon?
Frank smiles.
I cannot help suspecting that he may have had the misfortune to fall in love with her.
You're sure it couldn't have come from the Colonel?
If it was the Colonel, she would have guessed at once and not been puzzled. I have no doubt at all it was an offering of love.
An offering of love?
He glances across the table at Jane.
You have convinced me. I believe it was.
Frank joins Emma at the piano.
It was early in the month of May. Down by the green fields I chanced to stray.
I heard a young maiden sigh and say that the man she loved had strayed.
She's delighted Frank's joined in. Knightley glowers.
Oh, father, father, build me a boat.
For it's over to Ireland I'm yearning to float.
Frank gazes at Jane.
Search for my true love through tempest and storm.
For I know in her arms I'm safe from all harm.
Harriet joins in the applause.
Enough from me.
Emma joins the audience.
Miss Fairfax, would you give us the great pleasure of hearing you?
Yes, if you wish, Mr. Knightley.
Ah, Miss Smith. Keeping well, I trust. No more threats.
No, I'm very well now. Thank you, Mr. Perry.
Jane's turn. Frank joins Emma sitting at the back.
I should have been here a week tomorrow, half my time. Never knew days fly so fast.
Perhaps you now regret spending one of them in having your hair cut.
No, that is no subject of regret.
Mr. Weston is turning pages for Jane. Frank watches her play, then looks downcast. Emma notices.
What's the matter?
Oh, I was struck by... Really, Miss Fairfax has done her hair in so very odd a way. I never saw anything so outré. I must go and ask her whether it's an Irish fashion. Shall I?
No, you shouldn't.
Yes, I will. You shall see how she takes it. See whether she blushes.
Do excuse me, Miss Bates.
Knightley has approached Jane, but moves back when Frank bustles up and selects a song.
Alex.
Mr. Knightley and Mr. Weston clear the way for Frank, who joins Jane at the piano with a brilliant smile. Mrs. Weston comes to sit with Emma.
I have been making discoveries, Emma. Did you know that Miss Bates and Miss Fairfax came here in Mr. Knightley's own carriage and are to go home again the same way? Well, is that not a very marked attention from Mr. Knightley, who never uses his carriage for himself?
Yes, it is, but it is just the sort of kindness I would expect from him. He's not a gallant man, but he's a very humane one.
And I would love you all the day.
What do you say to Mr. Knightley, Miss Fairfax?
No. Cut my little nephew Henry out of inheriting Donwell. Never. Besides, he does not care about Jane Fairfax.
Yes, that would be
in the way of love, I'm sure he does not.
He is a great admirer of her talents. What
God, if he should have sent for this pianoforte.
One tiny one, I insist. I absolutely insist.
My dear sir, I must intervene. If Miss Fairfax says she is tired, then we should have the courtesy to believe her.
Mrs. Weston looks pointedly at Emma.
Would you have her sing herself hoarse? Come, Miss Fairfax, you have earned a rest.
Thank you.
Jane smiles gratefully at Mr. Knightley as she steps away, followed by Frank.
Miss Woodhouse, I have come here determined to dance, and nothing will satisfy me but that you and I shall show the way. Will you?
With pleasure.
Frank and Emma, Mr. Peel and Harriet, and Mr. Weston and Jane form three couples for the formal dance, which involves partner work and group turns. Knightley watches the dancers intently. Emma's standing at the end of the church aisle, holding her little nephew by the hand as Jane marries Mr. Knightley. Knightley slides the ring onto Jane's finger and turns to look at Emma, who cries out. The congregation stare.
But what about little Henry?
Emma wakes up. She sits up in bed. Harriet and Emma visit the Bates.
So obliged to you for your visit. Jane will be so pleased to show you the new instrument. Mr. Frank Churchill is here already, fastening the rivet of my mother's spectacles. He really is so big. Pray take care, Miss Woodhouse. Remember the step at the turning. Remember the step, Miss Smith, the step at the turning.
Frank is leaning close to Jane as they walk in. The couple spring apart.
Ah, this is a pleasure. You find me occupied in trying to be useful. The pianoforte would not stand steady. You see, we've been wedging it with paper. Will you try it now, Miss Fairfax? Just a few notes.
Jane sits at the piano, looking pale.
Yes. You hear that softness in the upper notes? Just what those in Mr. Dixon's party particularly prized.
I think it is such a fine instrument and suits Jane's style of playing very well.
Mr. Dixon, I believe, valued that tone particularly.
It isn't fair. Don't distress her.
Oh, what felicity to hear that tune again. If I mistake not, that was danced at Weymouth.
Jane quickly grabs some other sheet music.
Now, here's something new. A set of Irish melodies. Now, that was thoughtful of whoever sent the instrument. That betokens true affection, I believe.
Frank grins.
Oh, but I'm forgetting. Our ball is arranged for next Saturday at the Crown. My father is all enthusiasm. I have received permission from Enscombe to extend my stay, so I shall hope to see you all there.
And Miss Woodhouse.
I hope it is not too soon to secure you for the first two dances of the evening.
Mr. Elton is riding through the village in an open carriage with his new wife, Augusta. He gazes admiringly at the slender, well-dressed, slightly older woman at his side. Later, they take tea at Hartfield.
Why, I could almost fancy myself at Maple Grove. My brother-in-law, Mr. Suckling Seat, you know? Yes, the morning room there is just such a shape and size as this. Mr. E?
Yes, my love?
Is this room not astonishingly like the morning room at Maple Grove?
Very like indeed, Augusta. No one observes things as you do.
I am extremely partial to Maple Grove. My brother and sister will be enchanted with this place. People with extensive grounds are always pleased with anything in the same style.
When you've seen more of the country, you may think you've overrated Hartfield. Surrey is full of beauties.
Oh, yes, I am aware of that. It is the Garden of England, you know. Surrey is the Garden of England.
Many counties, I believe, are called the Garden of England.
Kent and Evesham, too.
No, I fancy not. I never heard any county but Surrey called so. My brother and sister have promised us a visit in the summer. They will have their barouche landau, of course, which holds four perfectly. But you will have many parties of that kind, I suppose, Miss Woodhouse.
No, not many. We are a very quiet set of people, I believe.
Well, we must do something about that, must we not, Mr. E?
Indeed, Augusta.
We've been calling at Randall's. Very pleasant people they seem to be. Mr. Weston seems an excellent creature. Quite a first-rate favorite with me already, I assure you.
And Mrs. Weston. She was your governess, I think. I was astonished to find her so ladylike. Quite the gentlewoman.
And who do you think came in while we were there? Knightley. Knightley himself. My caro sposo had spoken of my friend, Knightley. Well, I declare he need not be ashamed of his friend.
Knightley is quite the gentleman. And then Jane Fairfax. Oh, I quite rave about poor Jane Fairfax. And I've resolved to do what I can for her. I shall look out for a situation for her as a governess.
Insufferable woman. With her caro sposo and her misery. Actually, to discover that Mr. Knightley is a gentleman.
I thought she was a very pretty sort of young lady, though she speaks a little too quick. No doubt she'll make him a good wife, but I think he had better not have married.
Come, come, Mr. Woodhouse. You mustn't be an enemy to every marriage.
And poor Jane Fairfax, whatever her faults, has not deserved this. To be pitied and patronized by such a person. And now she must spend almost every day with the Eltons. With her taste and her pride. How could she endure it?
Perhaps it is better than being always at home.
You're right, Mrs. Weston. Miss Fairfax might well prefer to be invited by others, but she receives attentions from Mrs. Elton, which no one else pays her. She deserves better.
I know how highly you think of Jane Fairfax.
Yes. Anybody may know how highly I think of her.
Standing with Mrs. Weston, Emma turns to watch Mr. Knightley walk off in his broad-brimmed black hat. Mr. Woodhouse is at home, dozing by the fire, while Emma sits on a seat by a window reading. She puts down her book and looks out of the window at the formal gardens and fountain. A servant steps in.
Mr. Churchill, ma'am.
Frank bows and Emma puts a finger to her lips and indicates her sleeping father. Frank joins her.
I come as the bearer of evil tidings. Well, for me they are. Mrs. Churchill is ill. I must leave immediately for Enscombe.
I'm very sorry to hear it. I hope it is not very severe.
Who can tell? It would seem she's far too unwell to do without me. I dare say I shall arrive at Enscombe and find her quite recovered. You see how it is. I cannot refuse to go.
No, of course you cannot.
Of all horrid things, leave-taking is the worst.
But you will come again. This will not be your only. I suppose our poor Paul must be quite given up.
For the present. But if and when I get away, we shall have it. Don't forget your engagement.
No, I promise you that. The first two dances.
It has been such a fortnight. Every day more precious than the day before. Every day making me less fit to bear any other place.
And you must be off this very morning.
Yes, my father is to join me here. We will walk back together, and I must be off immediately.
Not 5 minutes to spare, even for Miss Fairfax and Miss Bates.
Oh, yes, I have called there. Passing the door, I thought it the right thing to do. In short, perhaps, Miss Woodhouse, I think you can hardly be quite without suspicion.
Emma frowns.
Better not to disturb Mr. Woodhouse. I hope we shall meet again before too long.
He kisses her hand.
Goodbye.
Emma stands in her pale print Empire Lion dress and watches him go. Harriet and Emma.
I have been thinking. Forgive me, Miss Woodhouse, but very sad that Mr. Frank Churchill has had to go away. I had thought...
Yes, so did I, Harriet, but I find I bear his absence very well. I believe I've enjoyed every moment I've spent in his company, but I suspect he's not necessary to my happiness.
A dinner party.
Now, Jane, you shall not escape me. Here is April coming. June will soon be here. I get quite anxious about you. Have you really heard of nothing? A situation such as you deserve is no everyday occurrence. I've already missed the opportunity with Mrs. Bragg, a cousin of Mr. Suckling of Maple Grove. The whole world was dying to be governess in that family. Wax candles in the schoolroom. You may imagine how desirable. But let us not lose hope. We must begin inquiring for you directly.
I beg you would not, Mrs. Elton. There are places in town where an inquiry would soon produce employment. Offices for the sale, not quite of human flesh, but of human intellect.
Oh, my dear, you quite shock me. If you mean a fling at the slave trade, I can assure you Mr. Sapling was always rather a friend to the abolition.
No, no. The governess trade was all I had in view. Different as to the guilt of those who carry it on. But as to the misery of its victims, I'm not sure where it lies.
Emma, the Eltons, and Mr. Knightley are at the table.
Mr. Weston.
Mr. Weston, have you dined? Do come and sit down.
No, 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 don't disturb yourselves. Yes, I have dined. I am just returned from London, and I came straight round here. My dear, Frank is coming again. Next week. The whole family. Mild air, you know, for Mrs. Churchill. They have taken a house at Richmond. He'll be able to ride over every day. Well, Emma, this is good news for you. You shall have your ball at the Crown after all.
Carriages pull up on the darkened street outside the Crown and guests enter for the ball, which is taking place in a large wooden-beamed upper room decorated with red and cream ribbons. Space has been made for a dance floor and a small band play on a balcony. Frank and Emma are among the first couples dancing a set dance, which begins in two rows. They smile admiringly at one another as they promenade, step and skip, then circle in a group of four with Harriet and another. Mr. Knightley is watching with a frown. The frown fades to a smile as Jane and Miss Bates approach.
These excellently contrived, upon my word. Nothing lacking. Could not have imagined it. Jane, Jane, look! Did you ever see anything like it? Mr. Knightley, it was a bit.
Augusta watches Frank dancing and approaches Mr. and Mrs. Weston.
A very fine young man indeed, Mr. Weston. You may believe me, I never compliment. So truly the gentleman. Without the least conceit or puppyism. I am extremely pleased with him.
Thank you, Mrs. Elton. I have yet to meet anyone who did not like my son.
Ah, but you must know that I can be very severe upon young men. I have a vast dislike of puppies, quite a horror of them. Had he turned out to be a puppy, I might have said some very cutting things, you may be sure. I am a scourge of puppies. Am I not, Mr. E?
Indeed you are, Augusta. Woe betide any puppy who ventures into your society.
Frank and Emma share their second dance, which follows another set pattern. The men and women stand in two facing rows. Every second couple take a turn around their neighbour, then promenade with their partners before stepping back into place. The Eltons are dancing, as is Harriet with a brown-haired man. Mr. Elton gazes at Emma. The women are in long, pale, low-cut gowns, silk gloves and pearls, and wear their hair pinned up. Emma catches Mr. Knightley watching. She smiles, but he looks down.
Goodness, his strokes would never know. Yes, I saw him not just now. Did you not get your feet wet? You say puppy from the carriage. No, we did not, I said, did we, Jane? There was a match, you know, and Mr. Frank Churchill was so extremely. And there he is now dancing. Mr. Frank Churchill cuts a very fine figure, does he not, Mr. Knightley?
Very sprightly.
Very sprightly, yes indeed, that is the word for it. And so well partnered in Miss Woodhouse. They make a very pretty pair, do they not, Jane? They might have been made to stand up together.
Mr. Knightley has joined Jane, who gazes wistfully at the dance floor. The dance ends and the musicians strike up another tune. This set dance involves several rounds of clapping and promenading in rows and some circling in groups of four. Jane, Mr. Weston, Emma and Frank make up one four, and Jane and Frank smile at each other as they dance. Harriet is sitting this one out, as is Mr. Elton, who's standing nearby watching the dance. Mrs. Weston, glamorous in a bronze dress to match her red curls, spies Harriet looking a little lonely and approaches Elton.
Do you not dance, Mr. Elton?
Most readily, Mrs. Weston, if you will dance with me.
Me, no. I would get you a better partner.
If Mrs. Gilbert wishes to dance, it would give me very great pleasure, I'm sure.
Mrs. Gilbert does not mean to dance. But here is a young lady disengaged, Miss Smith.
Miss Smith, I am much obliged to you. I did not notice, Miss Smith. But I'm an old married man now. My dancing days are over. You'll excuse me, Mrs. Weston.
Mrs. Weston turns to Harriet, who's overheard the conversation. Emma looks over anxiously from the dance floor. Mr. Knightley approaches, passing Elton.
Ah, Mr. Knightley.
Excuse me, sir.
He leaves Elton, who watches him walk straight over to Harriet and ask her to dance. Harriet's face lights up, and floating on air, she allows the dapper Knightley to lead her to the floor. Mr. Elton goes over to Augusta, who eyes him.
I see Knightley has taken pity on poor little Miss Smith. Very good nature, I declare.
Harriet's pale face shines proudly as she dances with Knightley. He takes her hands and they spin around together. The dance ends with both sexes giving a courtly bow. The gentlemen take the ladies' gloved hands and escort them from the floor. Knightley escorts a beaming Harriet back to her seat and has a quiet word with her before leaving. Emma, in her buttermilk-coloured silk dress, catches up with Knightley.
That was well done.
I think they aimed at wounding more than Harriet. Why are they your enemies, Emma? Perhaps I can guess in Mr. Elton's case. Confess, you did want him to marry Harriet.
Yes, I did, and they cannot forgive me. I admit now I was completely mistaken in Mr. Elton. There is a littleness about him which you discovered and I did not.
Well, in my turn, I'll admit I underestimated Harriet Smith. She has some first-rate qualities which Mrs. Elton is totally without. An unpretending, single-minded, artless girl. Infinitely to be preferred by any man of sense and taste to such a woman as Mrs. Elton.
Come, Miss Woodhouse. Miss Hartley, Miss Smith, what are you all doing? Come, Emma, set your companions the example.
I'm ready.
Who will you dance with?
You, if you will ask me.
Will you?
Indeed I will. I have seen how well you dance now. And we're not so much brother and sister as to make it improper.
Brother and sister? No, indeed.
She leads him onto the dance floor where the women and men form two facing rows and then meet, skip and part again in their couples. Jane is dancing with Mr. Weston and Harriet with Frank. On a sunny day, Harriet's walking along a path across a meadow with a friend.
No, I don't think him old at all. When you talk to him, he seems quite different. But I was very surprised at first.
Some gypsies are gathered nearby. Two women with dirty faces watch Harriet and her companion, then motion to some kids.
Go on, then.
The gang of about 10 urchins charge at Harriet and friend. They gather around the young ladies and push and pull them. Harriet's friend escapes and runs off while Harriet is brought down and surrounded. Just then, Frank comes riding along on his dappled charger.
What the devil did you do here? Stand away from that lady!
He chases them off. Later, Emma is tending to a tearful Harriet at Hartfield.
The most extraordinary good fortune I happened to come at that moment. I was just on my way to return a pair of scissors to Miss Bates. God knows what might have happened if I hadn't.
It does seem like Providence or something out of a romance full of brigands and outlaws. But for this to happen in Highbury...
How can I ever thank you enough, Mr. Churchill?
I'm happy to have been of service, Miss Smith.
He bows to Harriet, who's bashful. Emma imagines Frank galloping into the schoolyard where Harriet sits surrounded by her young pupils. Harriet leaps up excitedly, runs to Frank and is swept up onto the horse in front of him. Frank sweeps off his top hat and smiles to the schoolgirls, who all wave their white handkerchiefs as the couple gallop off into the sunset. Back to reality, and Emma smiles to herself as she looks between Frank and the bashful, red-nosed Harriet.
Mr. Knightley invites you to taste his strawberries, which are ripening fast.
Quite delightful, Knightley. Everything simple, natural, just as I like it. No form or parade. We should be just like gypsies.
Well, not in every respect, I trust.
Oh, I wish we had come on a donkey. Miss Bates and I, with my caro sposo walking by. Nothing could be more natural than that, I suppose.
Some might consider it so, madam.
But, Knightley, you should have left it all to me. The invitations, everything. I should have been glad to be Lady Patroness. It would have been no trouble to me.
Perhaps not. But there is only one woman I could ever allow to invite what guests she pleased to Donwell.
Mrs. Weston, I suppose.
No, Mrs. Knightley.
Emma listens.
And until she is in being, I will manage such matters myself.
Augusta pulls a face and follows him. Footmen and gardeners stand ready.
Well, here we are. You're all very welcome.
The finest fruit in England.
I believe they're everybody's favourite, always wholesome.
How delightful to gather for oneself. The only way of really enjoying them, don't you think? With one's basket over one's arm. So simple and natural. I fancy myself as a sort of shepherdess, you know.
Oh, are you fond of sheep then, Mrs. Elton?
I thought Mr. Churchill was to be with us today.
He hoped to ride over from Richmond.
He should have been here by now. I must confess I am a little anxious. I have fears of his horse.
More likely Mrs. Churchill has produced some new symptom to keep him with her. Oh, look, poor Jane Fairfax. How can she bear it?
I will not take no for an answer, Jane. This is a friend of Mrs. Bragg's. A very superior situation. With only two daughters and very close to Maple Grove. Say the word, Jane. I shall write this very day.
I beg you would excuse me, Mrs. Elton.
Jane hurries away from Augusta. Emma finds her taking refuge in an archway.
Miss Fairfax, are you quite well? Is there anything I can do? This heat really is most oppressive. Will you walk into the house with me?
Miss Woodhouse, I think I must go home. I am quite well, but I think I must make sure my grandmother lacks nothing. Will you be so kind as to say that when I am missed?
Yes, but let me order our carriage for you. It can be here in 5 minutes.
No, please. The greatest kindness you can do me is to let me have my own way and only say I'm gone when it is necessary. Will you do that?
Yes, of course, if you wish it.
Thank you. Oh, Miss Woodhouse, the comfort of being sometimes alone.
Looking a little puzzled, Emma lets Jane go, then smiles when she sees Mr. Knightley chatting intently to Harriet in the Abbey Rose Garden. Emma walks towards the house and just misses Frank arriving. He bumps into Jane at the top of some steps. They have a somewhat heated exchange and Jane goes. Emma enters the Abbey's great hall, which has a medieval feel, with high ceilings, stone walls, framed antlers and landscape paintings. A black dog pads out to welcome her. She joins her father, who's by a fire in a side room.
Ah, there you are, my dear. I hope you're being careful as to the draughts. You see, I am well here with a small fire, but this can be a very draughty house.
Later, Emma bumps into Frank, striding across the courtyard.
Ah, Miss Woodhouse. Where is everybody? I suppose there was hardly much point in my coming. The party will be breaking up, I suppose. I met one as I came in. Madness in such weather, absolute madness.
What delayed you?
Oh, Mrs. Churchill, one of her nervous seizures. This heat is really too much.
You will soon be cooler if you stand still.
Yes, thank you, but I must go back again. Could very ill be spared, but such a point was made of my coming.
But you will come tomorrow on our outing to Box Hill.
No, will not be worthwhile. If I come, I shall be cross.
Then pray stay at Richmond.
If I do, I shall be crosser still, thinking of you all there without me.
These are difficulties you must settle for yourself. Choose your own degree of crossness.
You're quite right. I'm an absolute bear today. I will leave you. If I come to Box Hill, I promise to be in good temper. Good day.
The party, consisting of horses and carriages, servants and picnickers, ride across a sunny meadow, heading for Box Hill. Most of the men of the party are on horseback up front, followed by the others in more comfortable carriages, and then male and female servants clinging precariously to piles of luggage on open carriages. They grind to a halt. Augusta and Elton are with Jane and Miss Bates.
So this is Box Hill. Well, I am very glad to see it.
Augusta leads her husband up the hill. A line of servants follow, struggling up the steep gradient with huge hampers, wooden chairs and tables and big umbrellas. Two servants falter and drop the stuff. Frank's with Emma and Harriet.
Let me say at once how much I'm obliged to you for telling me to come today. Miss Woodhouse found me very cross and fatigued yesterday and almost determined to go away forever. Well, for a while, at least as far as Switzerland. But thanks to her, you see, here I am.
I'm very glad she did persuade you.
Thank you, Miss Smith. Well, we passed Dr. Perry on our way here on horseback. What happened to Perry's plan to set up a carriage, Father?
I heard of no such plan.
Yes, you wrote of it in a letter.
No, not I. I never heard of it.
Lord, how strange. And I suppose...
Jane looks uncomfortable.
Then I suppose I must have dreamt it. Come, Miss Woodhouse. Come, Miss Smith. Best foot forward.
Knightley escorts Miss Bates.
Yes, as I was saying, we came in a party. Captain Fitzwillaby was at our party, I remember that. And Saturday we had, and then I do not know what happened. Captain Fitzwillaby was called away by his colonel, and so he had to leave us. And then it came on to rain. And...
Are you going to planograms? I'm never any good at them.
But Miss Fairfax is to be a governess, I understand, so she can teach us all. What do you think this could be, Miss Fairfax?
Frank hands her some little white letters. Jane studies them for a moment, then drops them on the rug.
Oh, may I try?
Harriet spreads the seven letters out.
B. U. L. No. I can't do it at all.
May I?
Oh, please.
Harriet, Frank, Jane and Emma watch Mr. Knightley rearrange the letters.
Blunder! Oh, why could I not see it?
Here's one for you, Miss Woodhouse.
Emma lays the letters on her palm and sees the words spelled Dixon. Knightley frowns as she hands them back.
Shame. Here, take it. I don't want it.
Shall I give it to her?
No, you mustn't.
Miss Fairfax, would you care to apply yourself to this?
Jane looks at the five letters, then drops them.
I didn't know proper names were allowed.
She leaves.
Come! What do you all do there? Are you not hungry?
A sumptuous picnic has been laid out. Knightley and Emma.
May I ask what the joke was that caused so much entertainment on one side and so much distress on the other?
Nothing. It was a silly private joke, that's all.
Was it? Emma, are you sure you understand the degree of acquaintance between those two?
Between Frank Churchill and Jane Fairfax? Could you really think that? But there is nothing between them, no attachment at all. That is, I presume there is none on her side, but I know there is nothing on his.
He watches her go. The party are split off in smaller groups under umbrellas. Frank's with Emma.
How strange that Mr. Frank Churchill should dream of Mr. Perry's carriage, for it was quite a secret, you know. Nobody knew of it but ourselves, and Jane, of course. And now for Mr. Frank Churchill to dream about it seems a very extraordinary thing, I think.
You are in much better spirits today.
That is because I'm under your command.
Can't you command yourself?
I don't believe I can. I believe I'm completely under your influence.
Since when?
Since I saw you first in March.
I think you should lower your voice. No one else is speaking.
I'm not saying anything to be ashamed of. I saw you first in March. Let everybody hear it, from Mickleham to Dorking. I saw Miss Emma Woodhouse first in March. There. Now, we are a very dull party, and that will not do. I'm ordered by Miss Woodhouse to say that she desires to know what you're all thinking.
Is Miss Woodhouse sure she would like to hear what we're all thinking?
No, upon no account. It is the very last thing I would stand the brunt of just now.
Ordered by Miss Woodhouse, indeed. Well, I was never in any circle before where I was ordered or required to do anything. Or when were young ladies ordered married women to do this or that?
I think it is only a kind of joke, Augusta.
Joke indeed. Some people don't seem to understand proper decorum at all.
In that case, Miss Woodhouse orders me to say that she requires something entertaining from each of you. It can be one very clever thing, or two moderately clever things, or three very dull things indeed.
More of our orders? Intolerable.
Well, I am happy to oblige Miss Woodhouse. Three very dull things indeed. That will just do for me, you know. I shall be sure to say three very dull things as soon as ever I open my mouth, shan't I? Do not you all think I shall?
But there may be a difficulty for you, Miss Bates. You'll be limited as to number. Only three at once.
Ah, yes, to be sure.
Frank's the only one amused.
I see what she means, and I will try to hold my tongue. I must make myself very disagreeable, or she would not have said such a thing to an old friend.
Miss Bates grows tearful.
Shall we walk, Augusta?
Mr. Elton leads his wife away.
Happy couple. How well they suit each other. Very lucky marrying as they did on such a short acquaintance formed in a public place. How many a man has committed himself on a short acquaintance and regretted it the rest of his life?
These things do occur, undoubtedly. But only the weakest character will allow such an unfortunate acquaintance to be in oppression forever.
Frank looks a little stung. He sips his wine. The picnic is over and servants are repacking the carriages. Harriet and Frank walk back down to the carriages, followed by Emma. Mr. Knightley pulls her aside.
Emma, how could you be so unfeeling to Miss Bates? So insolent in your wit to a woman of her age and of her situation?
I couldn't help myself. She is a good creature, but ridiculous you must have. I dare say she didn't understand me.
I assure you she did. She felt your full meaning. She's talked of it since, with more candor and generosity than she got from you. When you were a little girl, it was an honor for you to be noticed by Miss Bates. Now it's the other way round. She is poor. She has sunk from the comfort she was born to. And you chose to humble her? To laugh at her openly in company? Her situation should secure your compassion, not your ridicule.
He propels Emma up into her carriage and shuts the door. She sits with her back to him as he stands at the open window.
It was badly done, Emma. Badly done indeed.
He walks off and Emma turns to gaze after him, her face red with tears. A horse-drawn wagon with a wheel in the back passes Emma as she walks through the village to Miss Bates' house.
It is so very good of you. Always so good. Jane is not well. She has a fearful headache. It came upon her at Box Hill and it has got worse since. She asks me to make her apologies to you. She cannot leave her bed. But even so, she has determined to accept the post with Mrs. Smallridge. She would write today, and so we are to lose her. But it is very good of you to come, Miss Woodhouse. So very good. You are always very good.
Emma lowers her head. Later, a maid's waiting to take Emma's gloves when she gets home. A footman lets her into the drawing room where Knightley's with her father.
Ah, there you are, my dear. I wouldn't leave without seeing you. I'm going to London to spend a few days with John and Isabella. Have you anything to send or say? Besides the love which no one carries?
No, nothing. Isn't this rather a sudden scheme?
Yes. Or rather, I have been thinking of it for some little time.
Dear Emma has been to call on Mrs. and Miss Bates, Mr. Knightley. She's always so attentive to them.
Elegant in his dark tailcoat and stiff cream cravat, Mr. Knightley takes Emma's hand for a moment, gazes soulfully at her delicate fingers, then steps away again.
I must go.
He bows and Emma watches him walk out of the room.
I do not like it, Emma, when people go away. I know they must do sometimes, but I do not like it.
Nor I.
Harriet and Emma are on a muddy street in the village.
I have made up my mind that I shall never marry.
Harriet, what makes you say this? I hope it's not in compliment to Mr. Elton.
Oh, no. There is a person I admire. But he's not someone I could ever. I owe so much to him, and how could anyone not admire him?
And this dates from the service he rendered you?
Oh, yes. When I saw him coming, how noble he looked. What a change. From perfect misery to perfect happiness. But I mustn't think of him, must I?
Well, stranger things have... No. Dear Harriet, you mustn't let yourself be influenced, especially by me. From now on, I am determined to lead a better life.
Miss Bates sees Emma approaching and opens her window.
Oh, Miss Woodhouse, what can I say? We have such kind neighbours. But Jane has told me to say that she still feels quite unequal to receiving anybody. Oh, Miss Woodhouse, her spirits are quite overcome. She has not left her room for 3 days.
Mr. Martin's working in the fields when he notices a tearful Jane walk by. She doesn't notice him and carries on. A horseman rides across a darkening field with a letter for Mr. Weston.
Father, it is with the deepest sorrow that I must inform you of the death of my aunt, Mrs. Churchill. She was carried off by a seizure early on Tuesday morning. I was glad to be with her at the last. As to the future, that seems at present uncertain. I shall visit you again as soon as I can.
Harriet's in Emma's room.
Well, I'm heartily sorry for almost everything I said and thought about Mrs. Churchill.
Yes, poor lady. Very sad, so ill, and everyone vexed with her.
Two interesting questions remain. Will she have left Mr. Frank Churchill enough money to make him independent? And given that, who will he marry now he is free to make his own choice? I gather that the stepfather is a very easygoing man and quite unlike his wife.
Yes. Who will he marry now he has his choice?
Harriet, I have reformed. My lips are sealed.
Emma's reading on a stone bench in the garden.
Miss Woodhouse? Ah, Miss Woodhouse. Can you come to Randall's at any time this morning? Mrs. Weston wants to see you. Can you come?
Yes, of course. This moment, if you please. But what is the matter? Is she ill?
No. It's something else. Don't be impatient. It will all come out soon enough. Mrs. Weston will break it to you better than I can.
Good God, what? Something has happened to Isabella, to the children.
No, indeed. It's nothing to do with anyone by the name of Knightley. It is to do with... Come, walk with me. Mrs. Weston will not be easy until she has seen you.
What is it, my dear friend? Tell me at once. It will do you good to speak of your distress, whatever it is.
I will tell you, Emma. Frank was here this morning. He came to speak to his father on a subject. To announce an attachment. Emma, Frank is engaged to Jane Fairfax. He has been secretly engaged to her since October last when they met at Weymouth. It was he who sent the piano. Emma, he was engaged to Jane Fairfax before he ever came here.
Emma thinks back.
What is the matter? I have no doubt at all. It was an offering of love.
An offering of love? You have convinced me. I believe it was.
It seems the engagement had to be secret. He had to deceive us all because he feared his aunt's disapproval.
Or feared she would disinherit him.
It has hurt me, Emma, very much. It has hurt his father, too. Some part of his conduct we cannot excuse.
Let me relieve you on that score, at least. There was a time, I confess, when I liked him. When I liked him very much. And how it came to cease, I do not know, but you may believe me, I am safe. But his behaviour to her, and to us all. What hypocrisy, what deceit. Here we have been the whole winter and spring, fancying ourselves on an equal footing of truth and honour, and all this time he has... Oh, Lord, how shall I break it to Harriet?
Harriet?
Me? Why should you think it would affect me? You don't think I care for Mr. Frank Churchill?
But Harriet, didn't you say so yourself? Considering the service he rendered you, it was extremely natural.
No. Oh, you have misunderstood me. I meant a much more precious circumstance. I meant Mr. Knightley, when he asked me to dance.
Oh, good God. Oh, Harriet, if I had known you had meant Mr. Knightley, I should never in a million years have encouraged you.
Why should you not? You said that more wonderful things had happened, and why should it not be so?
And you believe he returns your affection?
Yes, I must say that I do.
Has he said anything directly?
No, but he has talked to me in a very particular way. He seemed to be asking whether my affections were engaged.
You are sure he was not thinking of Mr. Martin?
Mr. Martin? No, indeed. I hope I know better now than to care for Mr. Martin. I would never have thought of Mr. Knightley, you know, if you had not encouraged me.
Oh, God, that I had never met her!
Emma marches home and thinks back to how Harriet's face lit up when Knightley asked her to dance at the ball, and how radiant she looked as he led her onto the dance floor, and how she gazed at Mr. Knightley as they danced. Then she thinks back to spying the couple together in the rose garden at the Abbey, deep in conversation. She marches on, scowling. Now her thoughts turn to a future wedding presided over by Mr. Elton. From Emma's vantage point in the church aisle, she watches Knightley slide a wedding ring onto Jane's finger. Jane turns. Emma cries out.
No!
Mr. Woodhouse wakes up by the fire.
Did you say anything, my dear?
Nothing, Papa.
He falls asleep. Emma remembers Knightley holding baby Emma.
You and I shall never be enemies. Never be enemies. Never be enemies.
Emma remembers her and Knightley at the ball.
I've seen how well you dance now, and we are not so much brother and sister as to make it improper.
Brother and sister? No, indeed.
And at the picnic.
The situation should secure your compassion, not your ridicule. It was badly done, Emma. Badly done indeed.
Emma leaves her father snoozing and walks over to the window, tears streaking her cheeks.
I loved him. I have always loved him. What have I done?
Outside, storm clouds gather. Day, under a grey sky, a lonely-looking Emma is out in the extensive garden at home. Dressed in a pale empire-lined dress and sage-green shawl, she trails her fingers over some lavender bushes and lingers near an ornamental pond. She hears someone coming and moves to see whom. Peering around a bush, she sees Mr. Knightley coming down a flight of stone steps into the garden. At first, unsure of how to act, she turns her back, then thinks better of it and turns to face him, trying to smile. He's in a rush, his hair's tousled, and he looks concerned.
I did not expect to see you so soon.
I rode back this morning.
You must have had a wet ride.
Yes.
I have some news for you.
Miss Fairfax and Frank Churchill. I've heard it. I had a letter from Mr. Weston and came back directly.
You were probably less surprised than anyone. You had your suspicions. I wish I had attended to them. But I seem to have been doomed to blindness.
My dearest Emma, time will heal the wound. I cannot tell you what I feel. Abominable scoundrel. He will soon be gone. They will soon be in Yorkshire. I feel sorry for her. She deserves a better fate.
You are very kind, but you are mistaken. I have never really been attached to Mr. Churchill. I'm sorry if I gave that impression, as I am sure I did. I have very little to say for my own conduct. My vanity was flattered and I allowed his attentions. He never wished to make me fall in love with him. It was a blind to conceal his real situation. He has imposed on me, but he has not injured me.
Slightly thrown by this new information, Knightley frowns and paces past her, then turns back.
You know, he is a most fortunate man. Everything turns out for his good. He meets a young woman at a watering place, gains her affections, she consents to an engagement. He treats her abominably, she bears it like a saint. His aunt is in the way, his aunt dies. He has used everybody ill, and they are all delighted to forgive him. He is a most fortunate man indeed.
You speak as if you envied him.
I do envy him, Emma. In one respect, I envy him very much.
Troubled, she turns away from him.
You don't wish to know what that is?
He moves up closer to her.
You are determined, I see, to have no curiosity. Emma, I must tell you what you will not ask, though I may wish it unsaid the next moment.
Oh, then don't speak it. Take a little time. Don't commit yourself.
She turns to face him.
Stopped you ungraciously just then. Yes, I will hear you.
you wish to tell me you are contemplating something, yes, you may speak to me as a friend.
As a friend? Emma, that I fear. No, I have gone too far for concealment. Tell me then, have I no chance of ever succeeding? My dearest Emma, for dearest you will always be, tell me at once. Say no if it is to be said. I can't make speeches, Emma. If I loved you less, I might be able to talk about it more, but you know what I am. You hear nothing but truth from me. I've blamed you, I've lectured you, and you have borne it as no other woman in England would have borne it. Well, bear with the truth I tell you now. My manners may not have much to recommend them, but... oh, you understand me. Yes, you understand my feelings, and you will return them if you can.
I can. I do return them. I do love you. I believe I always have, though I didn't know it until yesterday, I think.
Then you do consent?
I do. I do. This is so strange.
I held you in my arms when you were 3 weeks old.
Do you like me as well now as you did then?
Knightley advances, tilts his head and shuts his eyes, ready for her embrace. Emma moves to meet his lips with hers, and they kiss. He holds her and the kiss goes on and on. Later, Emma's sitting dreamily in front of her bedroom mirror by candlelight.
Oh, Lord Harriet.
Harriet's walking to Emma's. They meet.
Oh, Miss Woodhouse, I was just coming to see you.
I was just on my way to the school.
Oh, Miss Woodhouse, you're going to be so angry with me.
No, no, quite the opposite.
I must tell you now, for you will know soon enough. I'm going to be married to Mr. Robert Martin. He came to the school. He was so polite and gentlemanlike, and he told me his feelings had never changed, that he loved me still, and that he had tried to overcome it, but not been able to. And Mr. Knightley had encouraged him to try again. He is so good. And I found I couldn't say no. In fact, I believe I have truly been in love with dear Robert all the time. Oh, Miss Woodhouse, say you will forgive me and think kindly of me, although I understand you will have to give me up and not see me anymore.
Oh, Harriet, this is very good news indeed.
What are you thinking of, Emma? No, I do not think this is a good idea at all. Well, think of poor Isabella. Think of poor Miss Taylor.
But I love him, Father, and he loves me.
Yes, that may very well be, but you'd much better not get married. I mean, what would I do if you went from Hartfield?
My dear sir, Emma and I have discussed this, and we have agreed there could be no question of Emma's leaving you. And we understand you would be much happier here at Hartfield rather than removing to Donwell Abbey. Therefore...
Mr. Knightley has offered to come and live here as long as you wish it, Papa. Isn't that good of him?
But we see him every day as it is. Why can we not go on as we did before?
We see him every day, but we are alone at night.
She and Knightley share a look.
Papa, I have heard that the chicken thieves have returned to the neighbourhood. Not 2 nights ago, they broke into Mrs. Weston's poultry house and stole all her turkeys.
Oh.
Would you not be happier knowing Mr. Knightley were in the house?
Why, yes, Emma. I believe I would.
The old man shakes the couple by the hand. Mr. Knightley rides back to Donwell Abbey on a tall brown horse and passes Mr. Martin and his other labourers and their families bringing in the harvest. Mr. Martin goes by on the back of a hay wagon and lifts his hat as Knightley gives him a wave. Knightley surveys his magnificent abbey homestead in the valley below. The Eltons arrive at the abbey, which is bustling with guests.
Well, I declare, Knightley invited his tenants.
for we to sit down with hobbledy hoys?
These great men can be eccentric, Augusta, my love. And I believe harvest suppers are traditional.
In my opinion, eccentricity can go too far.
The great hall is full of all social classes as a feast is prepared. Everyone's gathered around three long tables. Knightley's at the top table with Emma.
Ladies and gentlemen, friends, we have been blessed this year again with a good harvest. I have been blessed in another way too. By next harvest, I shall be living at Hartfield. Though I assure you all, I shall still be farming my estate and looking after you all. There will be stability. There will be continuation, though my life is to change. I ask you all to drink the health of the lady who has made me the happiest man on earth. Miss Emma Woodhouse.
Servants scrape away leftovers and the tables are cleared away for dancing to begin. Emma stands up and walks purposefully across the room, people curtsying and moving out of her path as she goes. She marches smartly over to where Harriet and her Mr. Martin are sitting in a corner, and a hush falls over the room. The couple rise to their feet, Harriet's face shining proudly.
Miss Woodhouse, may I have the honour of presenting Mr. Robert Martin?
He bows.
Delighted, ma'am.
And so am I.
She offers her hand.
I hope you'll both be very happy, and I hope you'll come and visit us soon at Hartfield, with your sister, of course, and Miss Smith.
Did you see that, Mr. E?
Well, I suppose she always meant to catch Knightley, if she could. I hope her pride will be contented now.
Oh, Emma, such happiness.
Congratulations, Emma.
No, you think the good fortune is all on my side.
Aye, not at all, not at all.
You needn't deny it, but this once I agree with you.
Emma smiles prettily at Knightley and his brother John. A band strike up in the corner and country dancing begins. Jane Fairfax is sitting by the fire with Knightley standing next to her. He looks over at Emma, who's standing a little way away, and they exchange a loving smile. Frank sidles up to Emma.
Excuse me.
Mr. Knightley goes.
Isn't she lovely? Did you ever see such a skin? Such smoothness?
I have always admired her complexion, though I remember a time when you found fault with her for being too pale.
What an impudent dog I am. Can you forgive me, Miss Woodhouse?
If she can forgive you, so can I suppose.
Oh, she does forgive me. She's a complete angel.
Jane shoots him a look.
Look at her. Observe the turn of her throat. I'd be glad to hear my Uncle Churchill means to give her all my aunt's jewels. And they look beautiful against that skin.
Very beautiful.
She hears us. She hears us, I see it in her cheek. She pretends to listen to the others, but she can attend to nothing else.
Frank goes over to Jane, who stands up quickly. Emma glances away as he kisses Jane's hand. All eyes are on elegant Mr. Knightley as he walks across the empty dance floor to Emma and bows. She smiles delightedly at him.
Will you dance with me, Emma? You and I are not so much brother and sister as to make it improper.
Brother and sister? No, indeed.
Eyes sparkling, she lets him lead her onto the dance floor, where they're joined by Frank and Jane, and then Harriet and Mr. Martin. The three couples cut a very fine figure as they form a small set of two rows and start to dance. The three gentlemen bow, then the couple step together. twirl slowly round in their pairs, then form a circle with hands held and promenade around before separating into two rows again. Other couples join in, forming further sets, and the extended rows of dancers hold hands and take two steps forwards and two steps back before partnering up again. Emma and Mr. Knightley can't take their eyes off each other. The couples form into their groups of six again and move as one. Outside in the grounds, thieves break into the poultry house. Chickens flap about in a panic. Dark clouds slowly obscure the moon. ITFC audio description by Lonnie Evans.